Kay's New Cat. Chapter 1. Kay Connolly and I have been best friends since elementary school. We used to spend the night at each other's houses every weekend, and in the ninth grade, we used to walk the neighborhood on Friday nights. It was all innocent fun back then. Not at all like it is now if two young girls are out at night walking the streets. Nowadays, we would be up to no good, party girls, or worse. Besides, it wasn't just us walking around the neighborhood, it was practically everyone in our age group. I'd never considered myself anyone special. I'm Heather Mondell, a single gal from Maryland, which is where this story comes out of my memory. It was forgotten for so many years, but in the end, things always come back. For us kids, the main place to go and hang out was Pizza Wheel. It was in a little strip mall on the corner of our one-horse town. Next to Pizza Wheel was a pub that only the people out of high school mostly frequented because of the alcohol that was served. The next in line was Carlo's Video. That left the parking lot for the younger kids. The high schoolers who had their licenses would all roll into the parking lot and hang out to smoke weed and drink beer in their muscle cars. Back then, if a guy didn't have a badass Chevelle, Trans Am, Nova, or other two-door hot rod with the back jacked up and the L60s on the rear, they weren't shit. We sported our peanut pants with pride and embroidered jeans. In case you're wondering, peanut pants are extremely low cut, so you had to wear a bodysuit with them or your butt would hang out when you sat down. It was about 1976. The popular term hippies had long since expired. Now school kids were basically divided into three groups. The freaks, who drank, smoked weed, and partied on whatever drug they could get their hands on. The jocks, who pretended to drink, played sports, and spoke harshly about anyone they were jealous of. And the nerds, who were in the math and drama clubs and had no life. This included the wrestling cheerleaders, who basically had few friends and were mostly overweight. Kay and I leaned toward the freak group, but also dabbled in a little jock. We were just plain cool. But wasn't everyone cool when they were in the ninth grade? One distant memory that always comes to mind happened on a snowy day in January when Kay and I were walking down the main street of our neighborhood and a car full of losers threw an ice ball out the window at us. They were going about 30 miles an hour and the ball from hell hit me just above the right knee. I thought I was going to die. When I think about it, I still remember it hitting me and I still remember the pain as it dropped me in the street. It felt like I would never walk again. The pain was so intense, I thought I would need an ambulance. Being so young, I couldn't believe anyone would do that on purpose. To hurt another human being without just cause wasn't comprehensible to me. It was the lowest of the low. I wasn't raised to be mean to anyone, and to make matters worse, I swear I heard them laughing when I fell in the street. Kay helped me as best she could, and I will always appreciate that. But in hindsight, no matter how good your best friend is at comforting you in an emergency, you still want to kill somebody. Shortly after that incident, my opinion of human nature changed yet again for the worse. This was around the time when the Bunting family lived down the street from our house. We used to see them outside grilling burgers on their front deck or playing board games. They always used to wave at us when we bicycled past their house, and everyone who knew them thought they were great neighbors and very friendly people. On a Sunday afternoon, about a month before, little Cora and Elizabeth Bunting were both playing down at the creek. It was warm that day. Unusually warm for December. So Mrs. Bunting was glad to see them able to go outside and get some fresh air. At 5 o'clock, when they never arrived home for dinner, both parents notified the local police and rounded up some friends and neighbors to begin looking for them. They had only been gone a short time, but dark came early that time of year, and they were so young it didn't take long for everyone to start worrying. Cora was 12, and Elizabeth was 7. They were good kids and always listened to their parents. The kids just went to the creek to skip rocks and were told not to go into the water at all. Cora was tall for her age and was the smartest kid in her class. She was fully capable of looking after her sister. A short time later, someone found both kids floating face down in the murky water alongside a huge oak that had fallen during the last big storm of the summer. It was determined that someone had held them under the water and killed them. The police offered a reward for any information that would lead to the capture of the killers. As it turned out, the murderers were never found, and our neighborhood was never quite the same after that. As far as I know, the only fact given out by the police surrounding the murders was when they took Elizabeth out of the water. She had cuts on her arms, as if she'd been clawed, and she had a wad of fur in her right hand, which was never explained. There was no more staying out past sunset, catching light bugs, or daring each other to make trips into the woods after dark. Kids went home promptly when the streetlights flicked on, and we all had to get used to it because complaining wasn't an option. We all understood why our parents became so strict with us, but it didn't mean we had to be happy about it. The Buntings soon moved away. I suppose continuing to live in a neighborhood where such a horrific family tragedy occurred was a daily reminder that made life too painful for them. A month or so after the deaths, the house went up for sale and they moved out a short time later. I remember the day they moved away. Not much was said. What was there to say? There were sad, understanding looks and short hugs. Everyone knew why they were leaving, and words were hard to find. Deep, penetrating expressions and heartfelt well wishes were given. Then they were gone, and the Buntings soon became just another couple who once lived in the neighborhood. Another faded memory, like their poor children, Cora and Elizabeth. Chapter 2. At the time, the Homeowners Association had voted to add on to one of the main streets in the neighborhood, and about 2 miles of construction was actively underway. They were putting more houses in, along with a county-connecting road that would completely ruin the fields and creek where Kay and I and the rest of the neighborhood children always played. They even filled in the pond we all went ice skating on during the cold months. The pond was big entertainment for families, and memories fill my head of all the girls wearing white figure skates with yarn balls tied onto the laces, and all the boys had those black hockey skates. It was so much fun back then. One day after school, just before summer vacation began, Kay and I were hanging out at the creek, as usual. We were trying to make a small section a little deeper so we could swim in it. As it was, we could only wade up to our knees. The thought of being able to at least sit on the bottom with the water up to our necks would have been great, and it would also allow us to float. In small towns, with little to keep teenagers occupied, creeks were a favorite for all ages. We filled up buckets with mud and rocks that we emptied onto the hillside next to the road. Under the road was a big drainage pipe, and lots of kids used to play in it, but not that day. We were all alone. As we filled the buckets, we heard a noise coming from the direction of the pipe. At first, we thought it was just a rabbit or some other animal rustling through the grass. When it didn't stop, curiosity got the best of us, and we wandered over to take a look. It turned out to be a small cat, creamy tan in color. It was beautiful. The hair was very long, and it was obvious the poor kitty was homeless because it was matted and desperately needed grooming. It also looked very thin, and neither Kay nor I thought it had eaten in quite some time. We sat down in the grass and called it over to us. It was a miracle because the cat slowly walked right up to us and sat down. Usually, homeless cats are scared to death of people, and they most certainly never walk right up to them. Everyone knows that cats are born with an inherent instinct of knowing human beings suck and usually want to grab them by the tail and fling them, especially boys. But this cat must have had a nice home sometime in its life to be so trusting. Almost immediately, Kay and I both tried to agree on which one of us